both of these gentlemen who are on, it would perhaps be an understatement to say I don't expect them to agree with all of my takes here tonight, but we're going to explore all the nuances here of the political landscape. We're going to look a lot at the healthcare issue. One of these guys has been on with us a few times before. One of these guys is a first-timer with us. Start with a guy who's been on a couple times before and who is used to jousting with me on issues of this sort, as we did on the healthcare issue even previously. We've talked about this, and he was kind enough to write up a preview here on his site here at epolitics.com, previewing it here tonight. It is the head honcho of epolitics.com, Colin Delaney. Colin, good to have you back on. Welcome to the program here tonight, my man.
Hey, great to be with you, man. I'm a little under the weather, but I'm very happy to be hanging out.
Well, you know what? We're going to have some fun tonight. I'm sorry to hear that you're a little under the weather, but we'll put a smile on your face, and I think you'll be in a better mood by the time this thing's done. This will get your juices flowing. I promise you that.
Believe you me, man, the political season these days looks a lot like WrestleMania, doesn't it?
Yes, exactly. Thank you. There are parallels. I was just waiting for somebody to notice that and point it out. And it's going to be an interesting dynamic. You will have probably, and we'll have to see how this goes, but probably an ideological tag team partner here. This could be a 2-on-1 match.
It's a tag team death match, man. Always my favorite.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you know, I will be the brave but outnumbered baby face here in the course of this discussion as we go forward. Our next guest that we have on here tonight with us is somebody who is really somebody who has shown a number of different talents and interests over the course of his career. The first thing, obviously, that comes to mind is actor from his role with The Sopranos as Little Paulie. To that, he has added author with the book Twisted Head, which is his memoirs and his very interesting life story, and also blogger and political analyst at The Huffington Post. Not the first Huffington Post person we've had on. We had Ryan Grimm on when he had his drug book that came on. So, and we might have had somebody on previously there. So we've Ariana has furnished us with a couple people over the period of time, probably behind her back. I'm sure she doesn't know she's been helping this show. But anyways, we are glad to welcome on here tonight the aforementioned Carl Capitordo with us here on the program for his first time on the FDH Lounge. Carl, good to have you on tonight. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hey, Rick, thanks for having me. We'll go easy on you.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah, you may want to reconsider after you hear the phrasing of the first question here.
Uh-oh. Colin, are you with me?
Yeah. Listen, man, we'll do what we need to do.
Oh,
you know,
okay.
I speak only truth. That's all I can claim. I speak only truth.
All right, good. I like that motto.
Yeah, this is going to be fun already. And just, again, to just set this up for everybody ahead of time here, because of the points of view involved, just to remind the audience, again, I am not a partisan. I am an admitted ideologue. I am a paleocon, but as I've said to Colin before, that makes me an ideological minority in the political party that I reluctantly associate with. So to me, there pretty much are no good guys. I may be going after the president and the majorities in Congress here tonight, but it's not on behalf of anybody. God knows George Bush screwed the pooch on stuff. I called him on this show and on our website less popular than gonorrhea. So you know, this is not me taking anybody's side here as I go through this. So first one here, and I'll address this one first to Colin, since you've been dealing with my nonsense previously here on the
yes,
show
sir.
Here. There is a point underneath this question, even though I'm going to have some fun with it, but.
There, all right, I'm ready. I'm prepared, man.
Okay.
I'm set. I'm in my 3-point
stance. Nervous. Okay.
I always like Colin when I can crack you up in the course of a question. I have a feeling I'm about to again here. But as I say, there is a point beneath this here. There is an actual point that I have. But as I look at this, okay, I go back to Ronald Reagan, who, you know, in my estimation, I say probably my favorite president of my lifetime. But when I look at the pygmies and dwarves that I'm comparing him to, that's kind of damning with faint praise. I don't really much like anybody that much. But anyways, ever since the time of Reagan, we've been hearing, you know, anecdotes You know, oh, Ronald Reagan, welfare queens and limousines. The Republicans are, you know, the party of anecdotes. And, you know, over time it's become, you know, the theological stuff here because of the religious right and everything like that. Oh, the one side is anecdotes and theology, and the other side is reason and enlightenment and all of that. The weird thing is, Colin, I look at this healthcare debate, and it, to me, has been nothing but anecdotes here. I mean, you look at that healthcare summit. It was, can you top this with the sob stories and stuff here? You know, I could just see them afterwards. Okay, Barney, you win the office pool. You know, left-handed Haitian immigrant with AIDS, clubfoot, and leukemia who got thrown off her healthcare plan. You know, you look at something like that. You look at the fact that the day of the march, all this stuff comes out about, you know, the alleged incidents there, none of which I think have been captured on camera, and I personally would suspect Acorn agent provocateurs, even if they did happen. But this whole thing of John Lewis and anybody else, oh, you know, some black guy, congressman got spit on or called names or whatever, we need to pass this bill. To me, Colin, I see nothing but anecdotal stuff that's been used to sell this whole thing here. Tell me where you think I'm wrong.
Well, you know, Rick, I always respect where you're coming from, and I always have a good time talking with you. But, you know, when you're talking, how many uninsured, 40 million
mm-hmm.
uninsured in this country, that's a lot of anecdotes, you know? And anecdotes win when they resonate, and these resonated. And I'll tell you, one reason that those things about the Tea Partiers, now, again, the few hundred people, really, it wasn't that many people who were at the Congress, a few thousand at most, and a few hundred who are the most vocal, are obviously, you know, they don't speak for everyone there, whatever. But they really, to a lot of us on the outside, just illustrated something that we have long suspected about the rabid anti-Obama fringe, is that they hate him because he's a black man, and they fear him because he's a black man. And again, I'm not trying to tar with a broad brush in any way. Plenty of people had very reasoned, sophisticated, rational questions with the healthcare reform. Absolutely, no problem at all. But there is a fringe out there that is afraid that somehow healthcare is designed to screw white people and help everyone else, whoever everyone else is. And we kind of got to see them the day of the vote, finally. You know, this stuff, yes, it's anecdotal, of course, but it's anecdotal on video, and it's anecdotal with 100 people watching and saying, yes, I saw that. I was 5 feet away. I heard them yell the N-word at people. You know, again, this is the fringe, but the fringe is kind of revealing an undercurrent of ugliness that I really think is going to come back to hurt the Republicans for a long, long time to come. You know, there's an old phrase in the Bible, you know, You sow the wind and you reap the whirlwind. Well, these guys have sown. When you start talking about the President of the United States as a socialist overlord who is evil and to be beaten back at all costs, there's a small fringe of people who are going to take that and run with it in ways that nobody wants. And when you encourage that and people, you know, kind of lose their minds a little bit, you pay the price.
Very, very interesting. Well, you know, well, I want to get your thoughts on this, Carl, you know, on how you saw us developing. The odd thing is, and when you talk about this in this perspective of the president, I read your column, you know, at the Huffington Post where you were talking about wanting to see the president do more. In an odd way, from the other side of the spectrum, I sort of agree with your perspective in the sense that I don't fear Obama like a Glenn Beck or somebody does, because I don't think Obama can get away with as much as some of these guys think that he can. I know that probably causes some impatience for guys on your side, but for guys on my side, I guess we sleep a little easier, you know, thinking that, you know, we're not going to have nationalization of industry tomorrow or anything like that. So how do you see this shaking out, Carl?
Well, I'm glad you say that you don't expect to see nationalization of industry. His opponents, and I would say that the fringe has been embraced by the mainstream Republican Party, which has been really horrifying to watch. They claim that this is nationalization. They keep talking about this complete takeover of one-sixth of our economy. He's a socialist. He's a, I don't know, Trotskyist. I don't know what they could keep. They have nothing but adjectives like that. They're going to kill grandma. These guys have been hysterical from the first mention of this. I agree with you, Rick, that he can't do what I would like him to do. Certainly when we're talking about this health insurance reform, I would like to have seen a single-payer system. I think ultimately it's the only way that's going to work. To me, logic says if you've got this gargantuan health insurance industry at the center of everything that requires a profit, look, private corporations require an escalating profit, right? Every quarter, you got to show your shareholders, look, we're making more and more and more. How are you going to do this? Except by raising premiums, withholding care, dropping people off your rolls, and so on. So to me, just common sense says that's never going to work long term. These two goals, providing, you know, reasonably priced health insurance so people can get taken care of, and making ever-escalating profits, these two things are at war with each other. And so I don't think that as long as you have that gargantuan corporate structure in the middle of this exchange, that you can really have a real comprehensive reform. We'll see how this thing works out. But I think Obama's really smart about that and about charting a middle course. To me, a little too middle. But, okay, I understand his position. Because he's so middle, he's so down the middle, I don't understand the hysteria. I don't understand it. It makes no sense. I'm a fan of Judge Judy, and she always says, you know, when a thing doesn't make sense, it's not true. So a lot of the stuff that these people are saying make no sense, I don't think it's true. I think Colin went right to it when he put race at the center of everything.
I do want to distinguish between you know, a lot of day-to-day Tea Partiers. You know, same way with the anti-immigrant folks, the Minutemen. A lot of the folks that I was just listening to a show on the Diane Rehm show on NPR earlier today, where they were talking about the militias, and they actually had one of the militia guys from the Midwest on, sort of talking. You know, raise a revolution against the government, but you know, he's a true militia guy, and they had him on defending his position. It was very interesting to hear. These guys are sincerely worried about things, right? And I think we always have to respect that. What really gets to me is the people that I feel are manipulating those feelings.
Yeah.
The John Boehners, the Glenn Becks.
Yes.
You know, those guys are going to pay the price for it. I think we're all going to pay the price for it. You know, it's quite possible somebody can get hurt or killed out of this on either side, and it'd be a tragedy.
The
you know, once you get people's emotions riled up to this point, it just becomes dangerous. Things become uncontrollable.
The interesting thing is, guys, I mean, again, I make distinctions on stuff here. By the way, I appreciate the distinction you made on the militias there, Colin. That was very fair of you because, again, if we're talking about guys who, whether we think it's right or wrong or whatever, it's a purely defensive thing, and we're here that if the government ever declares martial law or whatever, we're going to do something about it. Okay, I think those people should be left alone if they're not going to go out and hurt anybody else. I got no problem with that kind of stuff whatsoever. That's just my perspective. You know, if it's a defensive thing and if it's not them declaring war on the government, that's where I think any reasonable person draws a distinction. I appreciate you pointing that out from your side of the aisle, Colin, because I certainly agree with that. But as far as it goes here, again, you guys probably won't agree with this. I draw a distinction when I'm looking at talk radio, when I look at the issue here. Somebody like Limbaugh, somebody like Hannity, it's talking points mush. These guys, now part of it is, from my perspective, I've never forgiven them for being such huge George Bush suck-asses and foisting him on the Republican Party as they did, and continuing to enable his big government agenda, continuing to enable his adventurism and everything that they did over the course of 8 years. But anyways, they're not intellectually honest. They're just talking points, guys. Whatever disdain you guys have got for them, I would not disagree with. I look at somebody like Glenn Beck, and Glenn Beck, who was never a George Bush partisan, look it up, and to this day, I think, is dismissive of him in ways that somebody like Mark Levin, who's another toady, Mark Levin criticizes Glenn Beck. Because
I see what you're getting at. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I mean, because
Glenn Beck is sincere. He's just crazy.
Glenn Beck is out of his gourd. I mean, it only...
Yeah, he's insane. He doesn't live in the same universe the rest of us do.
No, there's something really, really wrong with that man.
Well, again, I think where I take issue with Glenn Beck is I think he's conflating these forces as more powerful than they are. Because when you look at this, okay, let's handicap the situation. Let's break it down. A completely inept and brain-dead Republican leadership in Congress on both sides here that have just basically fallen ass backwards into the lucky position in the polls that they're in. They are gravy training the Tea Party and the grassroots stuff as much as they can, because it sure isn't John Boehner and Mitch McConnell and anybody else, any of the geniuses in there that are responsible for this stuff.
So you agree with you 100% on that point.
Exactly. We actually agree on that part. But again, you look at this with all of that, with a collective Republican IQ in Congress that you could fit into, you know, a peanut jar and have plenty of room left over. The president and the Democratic majorities in both houses struggled by the skin of their teeth to get something through that, as Carl pointed out, doesn't even have single payer. Now, again, I'm not happy with it. I wanted something. Everybody agrees there's stuff that's got to be done. I'm a free market guy. I wanted to see market-based reforms, less of the distortions that I think the government has put into the marketplace since Medicare and Medicaid back in the 60s. But again, you know, I feel like, you know, the Democrats, for all of their, you know, weighty political thing, they had 60 votes for a good period of time here before Scott Brown. That's the best they were able to do. And don't get me wrong, again, like I said, from my point of view, I find it ruinous, but I'm not as afraid of these people as Glenn Beck and the rest of them. I guess that's where I part company. I don't see them as omnipotent, and they'll certainly be much less so in 2011 after this election.
Well, we'll see.
Carl, you want to take it, man?
You know, when you say you're not afraid of these people, you're talking about of the Democrats. You're
Obama and the Democratic majorities. They're not going
to
get cap and trade.
Good
through.
Not to be afraid. You know. I don't know if I really don't know on the issue of somebody like Glenn Beck, Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity, Bill O'Reilly. Honestly, I'm not sure of the sincerity of these guys, and I'm not sure of their level of fear of Obama and the Democratic majority in both houses. What we got to remember here is that they're performers, and they're paid huge, insane money. These guys are getting rich beyond anybody's imagination doing what they do. That's got to be figured into the equation somehow. They are first and foremost entertainers.
And Rush Limbaugh will tell you he frequently says that on his own show.
He will. He does say that, but I think his listeners and followers like to forget it. You know, they do like to forget it. And I think it's deeply, deeply cynical of these guys to get up there and do the kind of thing they do, which really does, you know, have a direct link to what we saw, that disgusting parade of epithets being thrown at people and spitting and brick throwing and all that stuff. They've got these, those people who are doing that on the front lines have people like Glenn Beck and Rush and the rest of them egging them on to it. At what point does that veer into, you know, hate speech, incitement to violence, incitement to riot? I mean, I think these lines really do need to be looked at. These are very, very tough times, and there's a lot of very tough work ahead of us here. These guys are not helping us. They're not helping us. At what point is it just irresponsible for them to be doing this for their own enrichment, for their own fame?
Well, I mean, to pivot off what you're saying, it is not. If you understand anything about politics and political theory, political philosophy, how governments organize themselves, there is no way you can realistically say that Barack Obama's plan is socialist. It's not nationalizing anything. It's actually going to, once the insurance companies wake up and realize how much they're wasting in administrative costs trying to deny people with pre-existing conditions and that sort of thing, they're going to rake in money. The number of people that insurance companies are going to insure because of this bill is going to go up. It's an insurance company profit bill. I mean, I would prefer to get rid of the middleman myself. I think Medicare apparently has a 3% administration cost compared. I mean, I made that number up, but it's in the low single digits.
Yes.
Compared to, several times that for private health insurance companies. But, Barack Obama's plan is a market based solution that incrementally adds on to this kind of ad hoc system we've built up over the last 50 years. It's not socialism. It's not a government takeover.
Okay, so
and that sort of thing, when the Republicans use that language, all it does is kill them in the long run, because all it does is they are going to look like fools.
Well, here's the thing, though, on that. I mean, and that's where, again, I, as a paleocon, you know, as this minority strain of ideology, paleocons, we lionize small business. Too many in the Republican Party lionize
I've run two of them. Three of them, actually.
too many in the Republican Party lionize big business. Rush Limbaugh will tell you that he lionizes big business. I don't, because big business will do whatever it needs to do in any set of circumstance, get into bed with whoever they need to get into. The insurance industries got into bed with Obama, and the one thing you can say about Glenn Beck, he's saying things, I think, that you may dispute the real-world application of it. You may say that it's incendiary to say it, but from a purely textbook point of view, you look at what the National Socialists did in Germany. That was an alliance of the government and big business in many ways here, when you've got, you know, big business willingly crawling into bed with the government to try to advance, you know, both the agenda of big government and big business.
Have you ever spent a day in a state legislature? That's all government is.
Yeah.
Is a series of alliances between elected officials and the people who help them in office.
Yeah.
You just described government. You know, I'm not a big fan of huge corporations. I think I'm a big fan of, like, 12 to 15 person teams that come together and do what they need to do. Kind of the Ocean's 11 sort of model. You know, I come out of the design world and the technology world where small, nimble companies are the norm. You know, those are the ones that get things done. I think large institutions corrupt just by their very nature. They, you know, once you have a certain amount of power, you tend to accumulate more. But that's why I believe we need government regulation, is to offset that tendency.
And, I mean, you know, look, the other thing, to piggyback on what you're saying there, Colin, and Rick, to address that point you just made, which is one of the flashpoints for me when people start, you know, that this is, it's that kernel of thought that you just named that results in these people, you know, drawing Hitler mustaches on images of Obama and carrying them around, which I never got. But I guess you just kind of explained to me what they're thinking. I never even understood what they were thinking. But they're saying this now about Obama because he's trying to do some commonsensical reforms of something that's really broken and really bringing us down as a people, because we got all these uninsured sick people that we do nothing about, bringing down the economy because it's a drain, all that. He's trying to
address it. We spend much more per capita than any other country in the world.
Right, and get less
on
care
healthcare
for it, and get less care for it. You know,
absolutely.
It's a broken valve there. But, okay, but this is the so-called analysis of Obama. George Bush, with Dick Cheney, talk about government and private industry being one. Look at Halliburton and all its subsidiaries. You talk about government and private industry being one. That was a total union of the two. Look at BlackRock, you know, which has a huge armed forces to match the national armed forces. I mean, they can go and, like, invade a country, no problem. They can send out armies to several countries at once, and they are a private industry, and they can't be touched. You know, but you didn't hear anybody talking this language about that. Nobody mentioned it. No, they're the good guys. They're helping us. They're doing the right thing, electrocuting soldiers in the field, sending rotten food to them, sending bad ammunition that can't be used to soldiers in the field. This is sickening stuff. This is stuff that it amounts to treason. You got kids in the field, and you're doing this to them. You're sending them rotten food, you're doing rotten wiring that's electrocuting them, you're sending them ammunition that from World War II, remember that whole scandal, that long since, that didn't work then and doesn't work now? I mean, that's insane. You didn't hear a peep of this kind of thing, Hitler references, not a peep. You know, this is shocking to me. You have a conservative Supreme Court that just said, oh, corporations are, since they're people, which we can talk about that some other time, they can spend, you know, limitless amounts. They have unfettered power to influence elections. That is much closer to what you're describing there, Rick, when you talk about what, you know, Hitler sought to do. I would like to leave Hitler out of this altogether. But if he's going to come into it...
I laugh because there's a line on the Internet that, you know, every discussion ultimately involves... Every argument online ultimately brings in Hitler at some point.
And ends up with Hitler. And I'd love to not to be all mentioned. Right. Those two syllables, we should just delete them from our political discussions. But there you go. But why didn't I hear a peep from anybody during all of that and more? And more. No problem, not a peep. Here comes Obama going, okay, let's make some common sense reforms to the way we deliver health care and health insurance in this country. He's Hitler. Oh, come on. Who's buying that? Is anybody really buying that? And these teabag people who, you know, I look at them, I look at these rallies, they all look like working people to me. These are not wealthy people. I've never seen so many people rally so hard, so passionately against their own best interest. It's crazy. I just recently reread Grapes of Wrath. And I was like, because I was going to go see, there's an opera version of it that was very beautiful that I was invited to see. And so I said, let me read the book for, and I thought to myself, would the Joads be Tea Partiers if they were around today?
Their grandkids would be.
Well, that's sad.
Well, it's
well, you know, I mean, there's a classic paradox there. And let me get all historical for a second. Let me whip out that bachelor's degree. But on the eve of World War I, there was a real belief that an international workers' movement might stop a war, right? That workers would feel that international bond and stick together. But instead, the workers in every country rallied around their own flag. We're a deeply, deeply tribal people.
Yes.
And, you know, if you look at, you know, the Tea Party demographic, they're a shrinking demographic. You know, they're white people in majority white areas, and the country is changing. And when people fear that they're, you know, falling out of place, that's when, you know, the most kind of hysteria can kick in.
Well, it's interesting here because, again, you know, I mentioned, you know, the Hitler thing because that was a strain of what Glenn Beck has tried to explain to people. But anyways, as far as
Glenn Beck is crazy.
As far as the Blackwater stuff goes, I'm not a neocon, so I'll just say touche on that. I'm sure Bill Kristol just nominated me for a spot at Gitmo. David Frum will now write a blog post about how I'm an unpatriotic conservative. So all of that, but whatever. I'll let the chips fall where they may. Having said that, though, on this whole subject of I don't think Obama and the Democrats are omnipotent. I don't fear them. Now, I say that from an optimistic perspective. You guys, maybe from a pessimistic perspective, that they're not omnipotent. I'll tell you what, though.
I want to ask you a quick question.
Yeah.
I want to ask you a question.
Yeah.
What did you think of the whole change to the student loan system?
You know, honestly, I was talking about that with a friend of mine today. I mean, I'm no friend of the banks. I mean, I have a tough time on this one here. I'm a limited government guy at the end of the day. I mean, that part of it does bother me. I don't see it as being the government's role, you know, to get involved in something like this. That's my...
Well, they already guaranteed all the loans.
Well, they
all
have.
They did was
they
cut
have.
Out the
middleman.
They're
already involved, and it's been a slippery slope, and we could make that argument. And the slippery slope thing, I think, applies a lot of ways to this debate. God knows George Bush with the old folks' Medicare boondoggle prescription D thing here, you know, certainly led to something like this, even if Republicans, you know, don't want to own up to it, Republican leaders. But the thing I want to ask you guys is, as far as the subject of Obama and the Democrats being omnipotent, we all think they're not. Like I said, I'm optimistic about that. You guys may be pessimistic about that. That's maybe not a good thing for you guys that they're not omnipotent. I'll tell you what, though. But I hear something today. I hear about Henry Waxman threatening to subpoena CEOs who are exercising their free speech rights, talking about what this thing is going to do to their bottom line. Caterpillar might now get, they might be facing a subpoena on some of these other things. The Tea Party folks that are saying, are we still living in America?
A congressional hearing subpoena is not, you know, you're going to jail. It just means come say howdy and explain yourself. I would happily accept a subpoena from a congressional committee because then I get to tell my story to the congressional committee. This isn't the McCarthy era.
this is a chance
to tell your story in front of the most influential body in the world, or in the U.S. government.
I think that's
a privilege.
Are we still living in America? How come there was no Tea Party when pretty much all our constitutional rights were suspended. And, by the way, still are. I mean, Obama hasn't reversed any of that. Under the Patriot Act, with all the rendition and all that stuff. I mean, look, if I or you or I guess any American citizen is wandering around the web and you say, you know, you follow a series of links and you say, you know, I want to find out about this, some of these terrorist groups. I want to find out, what are they saying to each other? What is it? And I'm researching and whatever. Maybe I then later do a subscription to The Nation, and that I don't know what series of signals would say, oh, potential terrorists, they can come right now under U.S. law, the law as it was altered under the Bush administration. They can come in the middle of the night. Talk about jackbooted thugs on the ground. They have the right to come in the middle of the night, break down my door, throw a hood over me. This is not drama. This is the law. Throw me on a plane, send me to Turkey, torture me. I can't have a lawyer. Nobody can know what happened to me. I'm a U.S. citizen. I'm a U.S. citizen. And this is what my country has become. Are we still living in America? Was not a question that was asked while they were making these laws, putting these laws into place. The most un-American imaginable, the most un-American laws imaginable, they altered our country forever until those laws are stricken from the books. My question is, why weren't these questions asked then? Why are these people waking up now with things like health care reform? But not then, when your Constitution was gutted. George Bush said the Constitution contains a lot of quaint notions. That was his quote. Quaint notions that don't work in the modern world. Well, you need a new constitutional Congress to declare that. The president doesn't get the right to declare that. So I want to know, where were these people then?
Well,
that's a genuine question.
Carl, I'd like to sincerely welcome you to the side of original intent. It sounds like you're an originalist. Welcome to our team.
Well, you know, Rick, I've told you many times. You and the plenty of people on the left have a lot to agree about.
Right. Well, that's true.
I mean, Barack Obama cites the Constitution just as much as the Tea Partiers do.
Yeah, I don't ever hear him talking about the 10th Amendment. I think Bob Sheets Bird bought his copy of the Constitution at a place where it doesn't have the 10th Amendment in it, but that's another story.
Well, you know, we fought a war back in 1861 to 1865 that killed about 600,000 Americans over the question of whether the federal government or the state's laws are supreme. That's settled. And a lot of the talk on the right reeks of slavery and states' rights, when basically Bob Cuccinella down in Virginia is making arguments against health care that are the same kind of arguments South Carolina was making in the 1840s and 1850s. These questions are settled.
Well, I've always said that, you know, I think the Bull Connors of the world really kind of poisoned the thing here. I think states' rights is a legitimate precept here. It's been used in ways that have been, you know, discredited to the notion of it. If you say states' rights, people are ready to put a swastika on your forehead. I don't think that's what it stands for in a textbook application kind of a way, but that's where I come from. Let me bring this full circle by asking you guys about this, about the mood of these things here and everything. You guys are bemoaning from, you know, a position as far as the body politic goes, you know, the mood of some of the stuff here and some of these, you know, excesses or whatever you want to call it from the Tea Party side and the talk radio side versus, I would say, you know, because I think you said something like, Carl, before, like they're not helping us, they're not doing us any favors. I would say that from my particular point of view, they're not doing guys like me any favors, because I'll tell you what, I hear guys like Mark Stein on the radio talking about Republicans who get elected need to, you know, try to defund this thing next year if they're in the majority. And I think to myself, Obama's sitting there licking his chops.
That's
Bill
right.
Clinton made speed of these guys in 95.
When he said bring it on, I think he was absolutely right.
Oh, my God. Yeah. I mean, the way you get rid of this right now, you can't do jack about this until 2013. The way to do this is to elect a new president with a new Congress, and you take it from there. This notion that we're going to do as much as – they are brain dead. These Republicans in Congress, the talk show guys that are egging them on here, I am honestly saying this. The fact that they're embracing party of no – guys like Paul Ryan, look, you can agree or disagree with them. And, Colin, I think you would agree with me on this, that you probably respect a guy like Paul Ryan. I mean, you don't have to agree with everything the guy's talking about, but it ought to be about ideas. I'm an ideas kind of a guy. I'm passionate about
Paul, which one's Paul Ryan?
Pardon?
You mean Rand Paul?
Paul Ryan, the Republican from Wisconsin. I think he's the head of the budget.
Oh, okay, okay. I was thinking of take a look at Ron Paul's son, who's running.
Yeah.
I think in Kentucky against Bunning.
I love
he
Ron
may
Paul.
He may want to win the primary.
I'm not an isolationist, but I love Ron Paul on everything. I'm a common sense interventionist. I'm with Ron Paul on everything except the isolationism. I love that kind of stuff too. But again, it's ideas. It's substantive stuff here, and the fact that they're not trying to go after Obama with positive ideas, that's what infuriates me, because shortcuts don't work. Republicans strategically aren't nearly as smart as Democrats. Just look at the 08 campaign and everything that the Democrats were able to put out there. Republicans will never beat them on going for the sizzle. The only way to do it, I think, is to try to do it on ideas. They're refusing to do it. They're taking shortcuts. I think it's going to bite guys like me in the butt. Guys like you are going to be the winners in the long haul, I think, if a lot of this stuff keeps up.
Well, look at what McCain said. I'm taking my ball and going home. We lost this one, so we're not going to cooperate on anything. What is he, six? My nephew will be seven in May. He knows how to play better with others than that. I mean, that is just silly. If that's going to be their approach, then you're right. Then they're digging their own grave. My prediction, though, is that you'll see them back away from this repeal thing that you're hearing now. I think they do know that it's a losing battle. I mean, even these lawsuits, I don't think are going to go anywhere. I just was hearing today about how the Georgia Attorney General, who's at Thurber Baker or somebody.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know him. I just happened to see him today. He is trying to bow out, trying to get Georgia to bow out of this thing. He said there's no legal basis for this. He's done a lot of research. There's no way that you're going to, on a constitutional basis, get to overturn healthcare reform as it was just passed. And it's a waste of taxpayers' money, and he doesn't want Georgia to be involved. So now they're talking about impeaching him.
Someone is talking about impeaching him. I mean, you always got to be careful. You don't want to generalize too much from anyone crazy. You know, I worked in the Texas legislature for 4 years back in the early 90s, and I'll tell you, in every legislature, there are a couple of crazies.
The governor, I believe the governor, said he's got to go. I believe the governor of Georgia said if he's...
Well, then that would be another thing entirely, wouldn't it?
I think that from a
Democrat's point of view, that as long as nobody gets hurt, because that's it, that's where I draw the line.
Yeah.
You know, obviously, you always have to. But the crazier these guys get, the more it helps the long run. Democrats in the long run,
because
it's going to drive that suburban middle away from. They're going to see this kind of ugly face. Of the extreme far, you know, this extreme bunch, and it's going to tar. I'm sure it's going to tar quite a lot of good public servants.
Well, you know, passion's a good thing. It should be passion about principle. That's what I want to see. And again, Republicans can't win on shortcuts. They're too stupid to know this. They can't win on image and just, you know, party of no. They're asinine, because Democrats are a million times better, you know, at getting the populace stirred up and winning on stuff like that. Again, look at 2008. Republicans can never win that way. This seems to be their attempt to compete on the same terrain. It is doomed to failure, and I'm pulling out my hair, and you guys, like I said, could end up being the winners in the long run. Something I wanted to also talk about here tonight while I have the panel here is and have you guys on. Carl, I wanted to talk about here, and I'd like to do this maybe at another time when we can, devote some more time to the specifics of it, but your book, Twisted Head, your memoirs about everything that basically led up, your time growing up in the Bronx, your travails that you went through, everything that led you to, your breakout there in terms of being on an iconic show like The Sopranos and everything that you've done since summed up in this book here. Talk about that, and we've got a link up to TwistedHead.com here tonight where people can find out more about it.
Oh, well, thanks. That's good. It's, I think in the introduction I call it an exorcism with laughs, and that's what I tried to, do in the book. It really is an exorcism. I mean, I didn't have a horrible growing up, but I did have a maniacal father, and so I've got my horror stories, but mostly it's just trying to capture it, a time and place, and trying to talk about how I was not supposed to be what I am, pretty much anything I am, I was not supposed to be. You'll have to look into the book a little bit to see what I'm talking about. And so, you know, it's just sort of, it's just my attempt to kind of round up all this crap that's always spinning around in my head and put it all on paper in some kind of entertaining way and say, okay, I'm done with that. Now let me move along. I'm a writer by training. I wandered into acting after writing for a number of years, mostly playwriting, and acting came in sort of on the side. But my first love and the first way I think of myself is as a writer. So although usually, like I say, playwriting, screenwriting, the book was my first attempt at prose. I had a good time doing it. I think it's an entertaining read. Certainly, I know for people my roughly my age, I just turned 51 between you and me in January, and so there's a lot of cultural references I think that are fun for people. I think it's a good read. I don't know. People can check it out.
It is. It is. Yeah, we had a copy sent here to the studio, which we appreciate. Yeah, it is an entertaining read, and you know, you learn a lot about the perspective. And all I can say is, you know, with having you guys on the show here tonight, it's funny. I know it was everything we promised it would be. Earlier on in the show, during our baseball roundtable, I had one of our panelists tell me and the other one that, you know, with all due respect, he thought we were way too pessimistic about the LA Angels this year. And I said, man, that ain't nothing compared to the fur that's going to fly when we start talking politics later in the show tonight, as clearly was the case. So, fellas, it was a lot of fun. And I think, you know, certainly the audience would appreciate it as well as us if we reconvened here. You know, it's going to be a very interesting off-year election here with the Congress up for grabs later this year. And, you know, things are only going to heat up from this point on. I think there's going to be a little bit of a lull as some of these primaries sort themselves out. But it's not going to take too much longer into the year, I think, for this thing to get fired up again. So definitely love to do this again with you guys.
Would love
it. Hey, I'm all up for it, man. Absolutely. Yeah. Carl, great to meet you.
You too, Colin. And I'm a fan of ePolitics. I know your site, and I'm a fan.
Oh, thank you. That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. No, this is great. Rick, hey, if you could stand it. I love this. I never get a chance to. I try to do this with friends, and they walk away from me. So this is a pleasure.
It's well, no, it's a lot of fun. I have to laugh too. You know, the lounge bringing people together. We did a October baseball roundtable last year. We had on Dave Hollins and I'm trying to think who the other guy was that was on with him. They were and Charlie Hayes, former teammates with the Phillies. And I guess, like, they hadn't talked, like, in years. I kind of lost track. Before the end of it, they were, like, wanting to swap phone numbers and stuff.
Uh-huh.
You know? So I had a little bit of a Charlie Hayes, Dave Hollins flashback there with you guys. But this is tremendous. It was a lot of fun. And, you know, I think this kind of sparring does all of our brains some good here. We'll definitely do it again. Thanks so much, fellas. I know the audience really benefited from this.
Thank you, Rick.
All right, thanks a lot, guys. And
appreciate
next time,
guys,
we'll
make
sure to put on the RNC's credit card.
Oh, we didn't even get into that. Okay, next time.
All right, yeah. I think Mike Steele, right. Mike Steele will be at parts unknown by the time we do it next time to circle back to wrestling.
I think you're right.
Yeah, exactly. So Colin Delaney from ePolitics and actor, author, Carl Capitordo joining us here tonight. Thanks a lot, guys.
Thank you.